No, thanks.
Please?
No, thanks.
A little one.
Yeah, no, thanks.
Hey, we're recording the podcast. Shut up.
Good morning to you wherever you are, because it is a bourgeois war for March 27th, 2024. Nailed it. My name is Bernie Burns. With me sitting right over there, she needs a hug. Oh my God, she needs a hug so bad. Ashley Burns.
I do need a hug today.
You do need a hug today. So just, we're not going to shock anybody with this news that a 93,000 ton cargo ship struck a bridge and collapsed it in Baltimore, Maryland, the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Our experience with that was we were publishing our podcast yesterday, hit the big green button. And then almost as soon as we did that, we started seeing all this stuff come flying across our computer screens about this cargo ship that had struck this bridge and it fell into the river. And we had, actually, you and I had a long debate about, okay, what should we do about this? Should we, you know, gather information and do breaking news? We did learn previously from an earthquake that happened off the coast of Japan that we were reporting things that by the time people woke up, I say reporting, we were relaying information, that by the time people woke up was completely out of date and not accurate. And then we had to go back and update that and say, hey, just check your local news source for more information. In the future, I think we've decided that's probably what we'll do. We'll put a little blurb at the beginning saying, hey, this tragedy has happened. Please go to your trusted news source and find out the most recent information that you can.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that's the challenge with something like a podcast is you record it and then it's done and then it lives that way.
We are very current, but we're not very breaking. Does that make sense?
Yes, that does make perfect sense.
When we hit publish, we do it on a high frequency, but the moment we hit publish, it's static for the next 24 hours until we get back on mic. And there's probably better sources in the world for an emerging event that is of critical importance.
Yes.
Than a podcast.
But it has been a little over 24 hours now. So a lot of the facts and findings of this event have solidified. At first, there were numbers flying around and there was worry about, people on the bridge, because this is a bridge that people drive across every day. 30,000 people a day use this bridge to commute.
That might not sound like a lot, but that's about 1,400 cars an hour distributed evenly over 24 hours, which cars don't distribute themselves evenly, as we all know.
So if there's a golden, I don't know, Ray of sunshine. I don't know what to call a bleaker version of that, but it's that this happened at 1:30 in the morning when traffic was minimal anyway, and the ship's captain was able to get a mayday out, and
that is such an incredible relief that they were able to. I'll read it here from the Washington Post. They were able to signal a mayday before they struck the bridge, and first responders were able to stop vehicles from crossing the bridge. Which is just, did you watch the video?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
When I was watching the video, watching those cars go by on the bridge as the ship was approaching, I was just the entire time like, please stop, please stop, please stop. And then the cars on the bridge, I'm going, go faster. And it was a huge relief to not see headlights, not see cars on the bridge when it eventually was struck by the cargo ship.
Yeah. And so there are a lot of videos out there and they are very confronting, and it's, when you see something like that, it's a huge, huge bridge. So it's a 1.6 mile span. That's a long distance. And this is an enormous ship. It's the size of a skyscraper. And so these
93,000 tons, it boggles the mind.
I can't even fathom that. And so to see this enormous ship run into this enormous bridge and the whole thing come down, like it was so fast. It was almost like matchsticks. And fortunately, the first responders were able to close the bridge. Unfortunately, there was a work crew filling potholes on the bridge, and they did go into the water. Two people were recovered from the water alive. Six are still missing. And I mean, my thoughts with the family. That is,
yeah, just working class people out there fixing potholes on a bridge,
making sure you got a smooth road.
Yep.
And
yep.
There are divers out looking, but given the temperature of the water, it's like something like 40 degrees. It does switch from a rescue operation to a recovery operation.
Yeah, according to Shay Stevens here of NPR News, that the Coast Guard has officially shifted from a rescue mission to a recovery mission, which is a dire shift if you have a missing relative in something like this. Also, though, the National Transportation Safety Board has begun their own independent investigation of it as well. As far as everyone knows, at this point in time, while we're recording this podcast, it was completely an accident and was not an attack. I my gut feeling says an attack wouldn't have happened at 1 a.m, you know, when there was no cars on the bridge.
I would agree with you. Interestingly enough, there was there's someone who's in our subreddit community who's a photojournalist based in Baltimore. I'm going to link a thread from this person in our link dump so you can read some of their accounts being essentially boots on the ground during the mustering of emergency vehicles and military and FBI and everything as they're all coming together and trying to address this tragedy and help as however they can.
And we're even seeing a shift now in the way the news is reporting it, because they're starting to talk now about the long-lasting economic impacts. Even in the Shea Stevens NPR news story I was talking about earlier, one of the things they cited was that Carnival Cruises can't drop off. They can't enter the port, so they have to drop off all their passengers in Virginia now, which then, of course, indicate that there's other ships that can't get into the port, which is going to have huge economic and supply chain impacts. Here's a trivia question. Do you remember the name of the ship that was blocking the Suez Canal?
Oh, it was the Ever Given. I always want to say Ever Grande, but it's not.
I always want to say Ever Green. Yeah.
it's the Ever Given.
That seemed like it blocked it forever.
It didn't. You know how long that ship was blocking the Suez Canal? 6 days.
I think we just talked about this too. It's one of those things. It's like sometimes these things, when they happen, this is not the huge tragedy that, of course, the bridge was, but 6 days blocking the Suez Canal, arguably a much bigger impact, the Suez Canal on global shipping than the port of Baltimore or the port of Maryland. But yeah, that had huge ripples economically and supply chain for the globe for a very long time.
Yeah, I as far as I'm aware, what comes through Baltimore is largely automobile deliveries, coal, agricultural products, things like that. So I suspect that those industries will be scrambling to try to find other ways to deliver those goods. If you look at the size of a container ship, That's a lot of containers. It's so many containers. And when I try to mentally line those containers up like a train, it's a very, very big train.
Well, when we moved internationally, we even looked at like getting a container to ship stuff over. It would be impossible to fill it. It's a huge thing. It's like the size of two rooms, basically, when you go to fill it. And it would have just been impossible to do it. So we just shipped on pallets for our stuff.
Yeah, whereas these are just like, you know, and they're stacked. You know, tens high and dozens wide. And so that's a lot of goods.
You ever seen the videos of the ships in the rough seas where they're just dumping the cargo overboard? It's just tipping. And those shipping containers are just boom in the water. And they look like Legos, but they're massive, massive containers. Yeah.
Yeah, the scale that the cargo ships work on, to be honest, is like I have trouble actually like making that scale work in my brain.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, it's interesting too. We were talking about how you like the Ever Given, like it becomes a trivia question and you forget about it. This happens too with major events. Like, do you remember the last time there was a major bridge collapse in the US? It wasn't struck by a ship, but it was just the bridge failed and collapsed during rush hour.
What bridge was this?
This was the I-35 West Mississippi River Bridge, officially known as Bridge 9340, that carried Interstate 35 West across the Mississippi River, 1/2 mile downstream from the St. Anthony Falls in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It collapsed in 2007. The bridge opened in 1967 and was Minnesota's third busiest bridge, carrying 140,000 vehicles daily.
God, that's so many people.
It experienced a catastrophic failure during the evening rush hour on August 1st, 2007, killing 13 people and injuring 145. God. And this is from the Wikipedia article about it. But it's crazy how people forget about that stuff. There was a point in time where, in the early 2000s, where I had friends who lived on the West Coast and I lived in Central Time, and I had this weird, dubious responsibility to keep calling people and saying, hey, can you wake up and just turn on your TV? First, it was 9/11. I had a friend who lived in LA who had a relative living in New York in Queens. Had to tell him about 9/11. And that's in their memory forever, that I had to call them and tell them about that. And then a month later, most people don't remember this. There was a plane that crashed in Queens, New York. I want to say it was like a few weeks after 9/11. And my friend who had a relative who lived in Queens, I had to call them back like a month later and go, hey, wake up and turn on your TV because there's a plane that just crashed into Queens. And of course, at the time, didn't know if it was, terrorist related or whatever. But once again, it was like, I don't think many people remember about a plane crashing into New York right after 9/11. And it happened almost immediately afterwards.
Yeah, it was November 12th, 2001.
November 12th, 2001. So 2 months later.
Yeah.
About 2 months later. Yeah. Which is crazy. Think about that. That's crazy. And even I was talking about this just recently. Growing up, two of the biggest events that ever happened in my life were the Challenger space shuttle explosion. And then in the 80s also happened the Chernobyl meltdown, which happened. And if anybody's seen the HBO docuseries about Chernobyl, it's just, you don't realize how close we were to like not being able to live in Eastern Europe for about 50 years.
Yeah. And it's crazy how close that was.
Oh, you mean how close it was to being that, or how close those two events were to each other? Do you know how close those two events were to each other? Wait, Challenger and Chernobyl?
No, how close were they?
They're about 2 months apart in 1986.
Wow, really? Yeah.
One was in late January 1986, and Chernobyl then was, I think, in April of 1986. Those events were like back to back, if you think about that. And those are the two biggest events probably of my childhood. And it's just weird how things sometimes happen like that. But then over time, as we are able to overcome this and people are able to respond to things, how we're able to like get beyond it.
Yeah. And sometimes these things do seem to go in runs. For example, everything that's been happening with Boeing,
which is interesting, right?
Yeah. Safety issue after safety issue after safety issue since the beginning of the year, to the point where they've now announced that their CEO is resigning, effective end of this year. And then a bunch of other senior executives are going with him.
I think the chairman of the board is not coming back.
Yeah, so the chair, Larry Kellner, and also the commercial planes head, Stan Deal, who's resigned effective Monday. So they're sort of cleaning house at the top. Mm-hmm. But I don't know who's going to replace the CEO. I don't feel like Boeing is, one, an easy company to run, and two, an easy company to fix.
No, and they've had problems for a while. Like Calhoun himself, the CEO who's now on his way out, he was brought in at the time where they were having the huge crisis around the 737 MAX planes. And he was brought in to smooth that over and have that transition. But I mean, even if you just look at something as simple as stock price, he came in at about 330 and now he's leaving at about 190. It's just been a really tough period of time for Boeing. And they're going to have to find, I don't know where you go to find a CEO to run a company like that, but it'll be a long search to find him.
Yeah.
It's a change that's needed, I think.
I think so too. But, and I think that company is going to need to go through a pretty significant end-to-end overhaul, which is also not something that happens overnight.
We've talked about Boeing being in the news cycle so much ever since Taylor Swift left. bring back Taylor Swift. Remember that when we were all like, I remember it was like 2018. No, it was in 2018. It was 2015, I think. Look at when David Bowie died. There was a year when it was like a bunch of celebrities died. And I want to say
it was 2016.
And people were like, oh man, 2016 is the worst year ever. Get me out of this year. And it just seems like since that period of time with like the US presidential election and then leading in the pandemic and everything, it's like, bring me back to that time. Bring me back to the time when my biggest concerns were an 80-year-old celebrity died, or IHOP changed their name to IHOB. That was like, I think IHOB was the last big social media meltdown before COVID hit. Remember that?
Before the meltdown just stayed,
right?
Melted down.
And it seemed like we never got back. We never got back, Ash. Like we're clawing our way back out, our way.
So what you're saying is that IHOP killed social media.
Here's what I'm saying. International House of Pancakes, we're fucking, your day's coming.
Who's the CEO? I want to talk to the CEO.
Do you remember how livid people were about this, the dumbest thing of all time?
What's this? His name is Dave Calhoun?
Look up for me. When was the IHOB catastrophe that took place? I'm sorry. I'm just asking you to look all this stuff up. I have a computer in front of me. But while you're looking it up, I want to talk about media stuff. Since this was a media heavy week for us, I sat down to watch a fictional apocalyptic tragedy, which was Three Body Problem, which has now been adapted as a series on Netflix. I sat down to watch it. I got to say, as somebody who read the books, I thought they did a very good job of adapting it for the screen. Well, I thought they did a really good job.
That is high praise considering I think I remember hearing that that was an unfilmable or like an untranslatable series of books. Like how do you put this book on the screen?
Well, they started with two scientists banging. So you'll love that. I'm just kidding.
And then she showed him her boobs.
And so there's a big asterisk here because I am saying that about the first episode of the first book adaptation. The second and third book in the trilogy, I don't know how they're going to adapt those. I really genuinely don't know how they're going to do it. That's the, if you ever saw the animated piece that was done from one of our discussions earlier, that was the one where they talk about viewing a three-dimensional space from a fourth-dimensional view. Some of that stuff is going to get, basically what you're going to have to do is you're going to have almost a season of a television show that's like the last 15 minutes of Interstellar, you know?
Yep.
It's going to have to be like that. And maybe they'll pull it off. Maybe they'll pull it off. But I don't know if they're going to be able to do that kind of stuff. It's wild. It's really wild. But I would definitely check it out. They did a good job of playing up the mystery of what's taking place, which is great because I do feel like at some point, and I blame Lost more than anything else for this, there was a point in time where the sci-fi genre got co-opted or weirdly mixed and muddled with the mystery genre. Well, like every sci-fi show that was coming out, like Heroes and Lost, your goal was, we got to figure out what's going on. Let's figure out what's happening. Let's figure out the mystery. And then they had to try to stay ahead of the audience. And it became this weird game of like, that's not sci-fi. Like there's no mystery to Star Wars. You know what I mean? There's no mystery to Star Trek. You're not trying to figure anything out. But that became a thing with the internet and sci-fi for a while. Luckily with this, they have the mystery. They're going down the road, but you know it's heading somewhere.
That's good. That's good. I think the weirdest sci-fi mystery series that I saw, and I didn't watch all of it, but I know you and JD were really into it. It was an HBO series. It was a sci-fi series. I don't think they finished it.
What is it?
It was the one.
Are you talking about Raised by Wolves?
Yes.
Get the fuck out of here. I got so bait and switched by that.
I saw that show on the screen. I was like, what is happening?
Such a great first episode. If you go watch the first episode of Raised by Wolves, it's like trippy 1970s sci-fi. All I'm going to say is somebody's baiting and switching you because there's a dude who's out there who's got a fetish and all of a sudden you're like eight episodes in, you're like, what the fuck am I watching here? What's happening? That's all I'll say about that. I don't want to yuck anybody's yum. People were really disappointed when they canned that series. I think it did make it to a season two. The first like two or three episodes of that series are fucking amazing. I hadn't seen sci-fi like that in such a long time. And then it takes a turn that's like, whoosh. There's a point in another show that I liked, and this is potentially going to piss a lot of people off.
All right, hot takes coming in.
Mr. Robot.
Yep, okay.
Which was a really popular show. Rami Malek is the lead in that. It's kind of where he broke out, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There's a moment in that show where you literally have to stop and go, am I watching a fan fiction here? Is that what I'm doing? Like, Shades of Gray, that was a 50.
Fifty Shades of Grey. It started out as a Twilight fan fiction.
Right. There is clearly a moment in Mr. Robot where you're like, oh, this is a fan fiction of another franchise. To the point where when the big thing that reveals that it is probably a fanfic of that thing, they play music from that original thing in it. It's such a strange choice. And I'm so amazed that more people didn't just completely abandon ship on that series when that moment happened. It was really, really strange. But I know people really love Mr. Robot as well. And I know there's people out there that really loved Raised by Wolves as well. And I'm sorry that your series didn't get to reach its completion. But people probably know when I hit eject. I probably was like, what? Yeah. So Three Body Problem, endorsement. Ashley, here's my stamp. Here, ready? Stamped.
Nice.
I liked it. So far, so good. Like, and I've liked the gentleman. So far, so good on the gentleman as well. So, here we go. Here we go.
We got
stuff to watch.
Thumbs up in two camps. So far, Netflix is 2 for 2 for our latest stuff to watch.
All right. Anything else to talk about today? I would love to do a poll. Would people like a breaking news alert at the start of things like that? Can you put that in the Spotify poll?
Yep, I can.
We'll just say, would you like a breaking news alert for world events? And we will be back to talk to you tomorrow. We hope that you all will be here as well.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Hey, stole my thing.